Good day to you, wherever you may be. Shattering Myths is about to begin. This program is devoted to the most important and fastest-growing segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are actually counterproductive, that they can't be fixed. Our mission, on behalf of those individuals, is to explore who is working against our interest, to understand how and why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning such schemes, even when they're patriotic, even when they're religious, isn't hateful. It's the most caring and compassionate thing we can do. In our second hour today, as we typically do on Mondays, it will be sports and the news. Oh, there are so many things to talk about, from a naked Jesus in a hotel room bed to Oprah Winfrey deciding that maybe she ought not celebrate Michael Sam's success before Michael Sam is successful. We will also examine issues related to sexual harassment on campuses throughout America, particularly in educational programs. Then in our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to continue to explore what Yahweh and Yahusha had to say about Paul's letters. None of it is good. It is obvious that Paul was a false prophet. Now, that might be difficult for many of our listeners to assimilate, but we will continue to prove it in our third hour today. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. I was just amazed by the news from SRN this morning. It's our State Department, it's NATO, it's the White House, all of which are just, it's just so revolting these days. They've been tongue-lashing Ukraine, telling Ukraine that it can't have its own troops in its own country if those troops are positioned anywhere near the border of the Ukraine, which for the past 300 years, with exception of the utter failure of the last 20, has been part of Russia. So, nope, you can't have your troops there. You can't be ready to protect ethnic Russians and Russian citizens, in fact, you know, everyone over the age of 20. That is living in the failed state called the Ukraine is a Russian citizen. Now, when Putin announces, you know, I'm just going to withdraw them. I think he's just sick and tired of the whole affair. And he says, I'm going to withdraw them. And what do we do as a country? We have NATO, who puts troops along the border with Russia, who has been nothing but provocative through this entire episode. We have them tongue-lashing. You get somebody. Somebody said, you know, I'm going to do what you've been requesting just because I'm tired of this whole affair. And then rather than saying, that's great, we even tongue-lash him for that. I mean, there is no way to win with the morons that the United States has deployed in NATO or the White House or in the State Department. If I were Putin, I'd be just revolted every time anybody in an official position opens their mouth in the United States. I would expect nothing but vomit to flow out. Public anger has reached a very high level here recently in Turkey. Now, it's only about 20% of Turks that are disgusted, and they ought to be. The world ought to be. The true nature of Erdogan and the arrogance that goes along with being a fundamentalist Muslim is on display. Now, most of Turkey doesn't give a darn. Most of Turkey is comprised of fundamentalist Muslims. He's acting just like them. He is acting like the perfect Muslim, so don't expect anyone to reject him outside of the 20% of Turks that aren't fundamentalist Muslims. But the public anger has been fueled in part by Erdogan's, this article says, own missteps while visiting the scene of the mine disaster last week. Now, this is a great example of what you don't want to do as a head of state when hundreds of people die in a mine explosion. First, Erdogan comments to relatives of the dead and injured miners was in which he described the disaster as par for the course in a dangerous business. I mean, imagine that. Imagine the a world leader is going to visit the those who are suffering the loss of a loved one in a mine explosion. And his response is, why are you so upset about all of this? I mean, it's par for the course. Mining is a dangerous business. Miners die. You know, on an average year, we lose 1,000 miners. What's the big deal? I mean, suck it up. So the child of a dead father, the wife of a dead husband, the mother of a dead son, ought to just suck it up, according to Erdogan. The report here says that's highly insensitive. Insensitive. Then the video taken the same day in Soma showed Erdogan telling a man, "Don't be so nasty," according to the footage aired Friday by DHA. The remarks initially reported were confirmed by CNN. He said, "You know, what happened happened. It's from Allah. If you boo the country's prime minister, you'll get slapped," Erdogan is heard saying. So, you know, in the world of predestination of Islam, which is one of a thousand reasons why Islam is stupid. If you're a Muslim, you've got to have your head, you should have your head examined. You know, in a religion that is where everything is predestined, which is the case in Islam. That's why he said, "Hey, what happened? What happened? It's from Allah. Like, you can't change your fate." I mean, why in the world fight for a religion that says everything is predestined? Why adhere to a religion that says everything is predestined? You know, if everything is predestined, your choices don't matter. Your actions don't matter. Nothing matters. And the whole hoax of creation is nothing but a cruel joke. Now, if you can't think your way through that, well, maybe you're a Presbyterian and have bought into the Calvinist theme of predestination, or you're a Roman Catholic and you've bought into Augustine's presentation of predestination. But if so, you're no better off than your average Muslim. Yes, that is the view of Islam. Erdogan is a fundamentalist Muslim. Islam is based on predestination. And so from an Islamic point of view, Allah made the mine disaster happen, and there is nothing that anyone could have done about it. But the next part of the statement is also fundamentalist Islam. In the Quran, it tells Muslims to obey Allah's orders, and conveys the notion that if an Islamic country has representatives over the people, they are to be obeyed too. It's all about obedience and Islam. And so when he said, you know, when you boo the prime minister, you're going to get slapped. That's exactly the Quran's point of view. There can be no choice. There can be no dissent. An Islamic country. If you stand up and you're opposed to any of Islam's representatives, you're going to get slapped right down. That was after another video clip emerged showing a crowd outside a grocery store angry and booing Erdogan. As the prime minister entered the crowded store, he appeared to put an arm choking a man around his neck. And the man was later identified as a minor. And here is Erdogan himself choking the man. Got him in a chokehold. After the confrontation, the video captured what appeared to be Erdogan's security guards beating that same man as he was wrestled to the floor. The miner said that Erdogan slapped him. He wants an apology the way he was treated by the prime minister's staff. In addition, a photograph surfaced Wednesday of an aide to Erdogan kicking a protester. The image that quickly became the symbol of the anger felt by so many against the government. It's only the anger of about 20%, folks. I mean, those 20% are the only sane people in Turkey. But 80% of Turks are fundamentalist Muslims. They think it's right to kick protesters. They think it's right to slap them down. They agree that Allah made it happen. They believe in predestination. And so, you know, it's important to expose this, not because anything's going to change in Turkey. The reason it needs to be exposed is because Western leaders, particularly the current American President Obama, lifts Erdogan up as an example for the Islamic Arab Spring. He's saying, yeah, there's a great example of what you ought to aspire to. And yet, Erdogan has imprisoned his generals because he viewed them as a threat on fake charges. Many he executed. He has imprisoned journalists who wrote critically of him on trumped-up charges. Many have been executed. He has turned Turkey into a fundamentalist Islamic state. He is an arrogant jerk. He's been caught in all manner of graft with audio recordings of his conversations with his son as to how they ought to launder money that they have scammed. You know, you could not find a more reprehensible man to model. And yet, he is the best example of any leader in the Islamic world. The only one that presidents and prime ministers in the United States and Europe promote. But you're seeing what he's really like. And in him, you're seeing the true nature of a good Muslim. All good Muslims are like this. The Quran says that they are like this. The Quran says that the moment they become peaceful, that they cease to be a Muslim. You're witnessing in these videos and these snapshots not only this man's character, but the character of Islam. You're witnessing Muhammad, who acted exactly the same way. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. A friend, listener to the program, sent me this story. It begins, homeless encampments known as tent cities are popping up across the country. They're formed as an alternative to shelters and to street living. And these makeshift communities are often set up off of highways, under bridges, and in the woods. Some even have elected mayors of the tent cities who rule the camps and who determines who can join in and who is not allowed. Some are overflowing, of course, with trash and with old food and with human waste as well as drug paraphernalia. It is interesting for two reasons. One is the National Law Center on Homeless and Poverty documented media accounts of well over 100 tent communities in the United States, and it says that these are on the rise. It is something that is foreboding, something we're going to see a lot more of. That means there's an average of two of them in each state. Now, that's not materially significant at the moment, but the very fact that they're on the rise is. The second thing that is interesting is that sometimes there's really nothing you can do. And the shelters have been provided for those that are homeless. There's food programs for those that are homeless. There's welfare programs for those that are homeless. There's housing assistance for those who are homeless. There's all sorts of programs. I mean, the government, the great society, created scores of programs, giving away trillions of dollars for the homeless. But until you recognize what causes most people to be homeless, you can't solve the problem. And all too often, the problem is, and the most common denominator among homeless individuals is drug use. It's alcoholism or illegal drugs. and a dependency on those things. And a person squandering anything that is given to them on more alcohol or more drugs. And since you're not allowed to consume intoxicating amounts of drugs or alcohols in the homeless shelters, they want to be able to do what they crave. And so that's why they live on the streets. It's why they beg on the streets. And it's why they live in these tent shelters. Is that 100% of the occupants? No, but it's probably somewhere between 80 and 90% of the homeless have an alcohol or drug problem. And without that problem being resolved, there is no way to solve the problem of the homeless. And the only way that problem can be resolved is for those who have the problem to want to resolve it. If you don't want to free yourself from drug dependency or alcoholism, it isn't going to happen. No one can force that upon you. And so there is an issue that we've spent trillions of dollars trying to resolve that, quite frankly, cannot be resolved. It isn't a societal issue that can be resolved from a societal solution. It's a personal issue. Now, it's also important to recognize that not only are these tent cities littered with trash and drug paraphernalia, discarded whiskey bottles and the like, and human refuse, which they won't even go far away from the tent city to be sanitary, that this is a problem with also the homeless on streets. It's a breeding ground for disease. And there are a lot of communities that actually encourage all of this. And you wonder, why? You know, this is not a human rights issue. It's a human wrong issue. You know, I don't think society is better off when we coddle people who are unwilling to resolve issues like this. I've got no problem paying for rehab. I've got no issue with the government saying, you know, if you have a drug addiction, we will sponsor at least once for you treatment. But you've got to choose it on your own. And then once you're out, you've got to try to make something of your life. But when you coddle giving money to those who have destroyed their life and their wealth through drugs and alcohol, you're not making them better. You're not being compassionate. Now, that being the case, you might say, well, why in the world would you be an advocate for legalizing drugs? And I am. I'm an advocate for legalizing the consumption of alcohol at any age and for the complete legalization of all drugs, because I think people ought to have the option to poison themselves if they wish to, and that as a society we ought to be concerned about explaining the reasons why those are bad choices, but not tell people what they can and cannot do. North Korea's president made an emotional apology on Monday over the ferry disaster that killed close to 300 people last month, and said that she would dismantle the country's Coast Guard. It's, you know, astonishing what was said here. As president who should be responsible for people's life and security, I'm sincerely apologizing to the people for having for them to have to suffer pain, said President Park Geun-bi. The final responsibility for not being able to respond properly lies on me. What an egotistical, idiotic statement. God, what does she think she is, God? No, a goddess. Excuse me. Let's be politically correct. She's a goddess. Hey, this is everything that is wrong with the politics. That politicians view that they're responsible for people's lives. They are the great savior. I mean, I'm all for people taking responsibility, for being accountable. And so the captain of that ship that was in his quarters and bailed out at the first opportunity, and the young woman who was at the helm when she turned the ship way too sharply and turned it over, and the whoever the individual was that made the decision to overload the vessel and make it top-heavy, all those individuals ought to be responsible, and they ought to be accountable. But the president of the country coming out and saying, "I'm responsible. I'm responsible, you. It's me. I should be the savior. I should have been there in the water ready to catch you. I should have had the Coast Guard have vessels ready there right beside you, ready to take you in." I mean, good grief. I mean, this may be the antithesis of Erdogan saying that, hey, mining's dangerous. Don't make such a fit over all of this, and kicking and choking the protesters as if, you know, hey, man, I didn't have anything to do with this. Don't burden me with it. And the opposite side is, blame me. I'm responsible. I should have been there. My job is to take care of all the little people. And it is what you're seeing in these stories is the extremes of why God hates politics. You know, she goes on to say that as president, I feel a sense of sorrow for not being able to protect them during their family trip, speaking of the young people who died in their that ferry. It was a tragedy. And the tragedy is strictly because of the fact that that the ferry was overloaded, grossly overloaded, and it became, therefore, unstable. And the young woman who was at the helm had not had a lot of experience maneuvering the ferry. The currents were strong, and she turned the top-heavy, overloaded vessel way too sharply, and it capsized. That's what happened. Some people should be held accountable. Whoever made the decision to overload the vessel, whoever made the decision to accept a bribe that enabled this ferry to operate under that basis on regularly should be held accountable. The captain and the third officer who turned the tiller should be held accountable. But the prime minister, the president, that's just grotesquely egotistical. Hello, Glenn. Welcome.
Hello, Yada. I'm sure she didn't, I'm relatively sure she wasn't intending to be egotistical, but I do agree it's a bit out of perspective. I mean, well, you like sports, who's the first guy who gets canned when a sports team flubs or coach? You know, it's like, oh, well, you know.
You know, I understand why if the team performs poorly, the coach is blamed. Now, it's not always the coach's responsibility, but the president of the country is not a coach of a sports team. This notion that the
separation, yeah.
Oh, this, to go out there and say I'm responsible for a maritime accident, and my job is to protect and save the people and protect them from harm. What a moronic notion. I mean, it's just so grotesquely misguided and egotistical. You have to shake your head. It's exactly like the other half of the equation, the other leader in Korea immediately after it happened, accusing the captain of murder. In fact, he's going to be indicted on murder charges. You know, murder is the premeditated decision to take another person's life. There is 0% possibility that the captain of that ship, who was in his quarters when this occurred, premeditated murder.
I mean, criminal negligence.
Criminal negligence. They have a term for homicide when when the individual reckless endangerment is one of those terms. But there's a series of terms that describe that. You know, manslaughter is a term. With manslaughter, there's no premeditation. It's just that your actions caused many deaths that could have been avoided had you done your job or not acted inappropriately. But murder in any culture requires premeditation. They didn't premeditate this. So it's just the Korean response to this.
From one extreme to the other, you know.
Yes.
Erdogan having sociopathic lack of empathy to her, trying to codependently take responsibility for something that's really not her fault.
Right.
And, you know, when it's ridiculous.
Responsibility is an important part of us as a people making good decisions regarding our lives. So I'm all for taking responsibility, but you ought not take responsibility for things that aren't your responsibility.
Right. That is narcissistic.
It is narcissistic. It absolutely is. Yeah, it's her statements are grotesquely egotistical and irresponsible, really.
She's irresponsible in taking responsibility.
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely. Irresponsible in taking responsibility. It's very much like our military that claims responsibility for providing our freedom, and yet there's not a single example of it. You know, claiming credit and responsibility for things that they're not responsible for doing.
Speaking of military, I especially love the news story that has Eric Holder levying charges against Chinese generals for espionage.
What it was just stunning there is, of course, that the only reason that he could even level the charge is because we have been spying on them. You know, the Hawaii episode where America did everything it could possibly do to take the world's leader in telecommunications technology and to prohibit any American state or business from buying their technology. And we did so because we said that it's a possibility that the Chinese government could use it to spy. And when in fact we were inside of Hawaii servers and listening to the private conversations of every single executive within Hawaii, and we were stealing their information. So we were guilty of what we were falsely accusing them of. And it's absurdly hypocritical. And that we would stand on our soapbox and pound our chest and say, oh boy, those generals, they're spying on America. When our spying on them is grotesquely worse than it is the other way around.
Oh, yeah. That just seems to be our specialty these days.
It is. You know, there's a new program called Newton that the NSA has been deploying. And the purpose of Newton Fig Newton. The purpose of Newton is to track millions of young children, early age children, typically in the later years of grammar school and in what we used to call junior high. I guess it's intermediate school now.
Middle school.
I'm revealing my age when I call it junior high. And what they do is they track certain students, and it's a pretty broad swath, and they look for the way that they use the Internet to do their homework. And based upon the frequency of their clicks and the logic behind where they choose to click, they make a determination what individuals they ought to be concerned about because their focus is diligent and their choices are rational. and who they should, don't worry about that individual. They're just, they're distracted. They're going all sorts of places that do not pertain to the subject that they're studying. And they then lump people into categories. It's kind of like a Brave New World. If somebody is as capable of being a truck driver, and I'm not criticizing truck drivers, it's a worthy profession. But if somebody is suited for a particular profession and is unlikely to stand up against them and expose them, then we just ought not be concerned about those individuals. We ought to only track and be concerned about those who show uncommon abilities.
Well, they can tell who's fit for public office by how frequently they plagiarize.
That would be perfect.
And infringe on intellectual property rights.
Yeah, well, there you go. But I mean, that is a conditioning mechanism that really is troubling.
Well, yeah, when you think back to the systematic testing of students that we've seen just like all during my lifetime, whether it's Iowa test, California test, Minnesota multi-phase personality inventory, Myers-Briggs, Taylor-Johnson, soft sciences have been very much qualifying and quantifying our psychological makeup for a very long time.
That is correct. And all of that now is being kept by the federal government to make distinctions as to who they should be concerned about and who they shouldn't be concerned about. I'm certain with the Edward Snowden episode that they're using it as a defense mechanism. We'll be back in a moment. I wonder what the connection is between this story and the story that the world is grimacing about regarding Boko Haram having kidnapped so many little girls, saying that they did so in the name of Allah. Hours after a Sudanese court sentenced his pregnant wife to death when she refused to recant her Christian faith, her husband told CNN that he feels hopeless. "I'm so frustrated. I don't know what to do." This week at Khartoum, a Khartoum court convicted his wife, 27 years old, of apostasy, or of renunciation of the faith. She is a Christian, her husband said, but the court considers her to be a Muslim. No, she's not considered to be a Muslim. She was considered to have been a Muslim. The court convicted her of adultery and sentenced her to 100 lashes because of her marriage to a Christian man is considered void under Sharia law. Here's the reality. In Islam, a person, male or female, is considered to be a Muslim if their father was a Muslim. And the reason that it's decided that way is that a Muslim man is free to marry a woman of any religion, including a Christian, because marriage in Islam is all about conquest, not about love. And so they're able to marry anyone that they choose to marry. And yet a Muslim woman, because she has no rights, is not allowed to marry anyone other than a Muslim. And if you're born to a Muslim father, no matter if your mother is or is not Muslim, you are considered to be Muslim. Then the Quran says that if any Muslim rejects their religion, kill them. So by the Quran and by Sharia, Muhammad's example, this woman is a criminal. She married a Christian man, which means that she has violated Sharia law because a Muslim woman can't marry a Christian man. And she is a Muslim woman because her father was Muslim. And the fact that she has denounced Islam makes her a hypocrite, which the Quran says in the ninth surah, must be killed. So according to Islam, the court did exactly what Allah, the Quran, and Muhammad would have them do. And yet the husband can't understand it. See, this girl's father left the mother right after she was born, and she was raised by her Christian mother, so she's been a Christian her whole life. But from an Islamic point of view, she rejected her religion. By the way, from an Islamic perspective, since Barack Hussein Obama's father was a Muslim. Everyone in the Muslim world views him as a Muslim. He is a Muslim from their perspective. And as a Muslim, if he were to announce that he is no longer a Muslim, he would be considered an apostate and would be killed on for that reason alone. So what do you think the commonality is between this story of this woman whose only crime is that she doesn't want to be a Muslim and therefore going to receive a 100 lashes before being killed, is in the story of Boko Haram saying that Allah told us that it was A-okay for us to kidnap these 300 girls. Oh, there's an international. Yeah, there's an international committee.
All the liberal feminists, when it comes to standing up to this stuff.
Yeah, well, where are they? You know, where are they standing up for the rights of this woman? It's where are they when, in terms of renouncing Sharia law? Where are they in terms of renouncing Islam? You know, you've got the liberal intelligentsia in Hollywood to temporarily stop going to the polo lounge at the Wilshire Beverly Hilton Hotel, whichever the one it is. Maybe it's one of the same, because it's owned by the Sultan of Brunei, and he recently said that he was imposing Sharia law. And the only reason is because they have heard that in Sharia law there is punishment for being a homosexual. And so that's why they finally say, oh, boy, you can't be against homosexuality or we're going to stop going to your bar. And yet they're silent when a woman is convicted for choosing not to be a Muslim. They're silent when little girls are kidnapped in the name of Islam and either forced to convert to Islam or to be raped. It's hypocrisy is deafening.